such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. I'm joined, as I am every Monday now, by my lovely co-host, Loretta Frelick, a former criminal prosecutor for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and we're filling in for Father Anthony. And it is great to be back and great to be with you on this beautiful, beautiful day in November day in Chicago, an unusually warm and sunny day. And I'm worried that this is like we're getting some kind of weather trick played on us. And this is all part of Tom Skilling retiring, Loretta. And then there's going to be some horrible shoe that drops on us. And then we're going to have 8 feet of snow all winter.
8 feet of snow is just going to be a sign of God watering his land.
There you go.
Sign of his favor.
So I'm very happy I did now, because it's so late in the season. I went to Home Depot and all the bulbs, the fall bulbs, are half price.
So oh, how lovely,
I got tulips. I got hyacinths. And I'm going to spend the afternoon after the show today putting them in before that first hard freeze. With tulips, you got to get them in the ground before the first hard freeze, but you can't put them in while the ground is still too warm, or the roots won't.
Oh,
yeah, and so you can't put them in planters either, because they're not deep enough.
Very interesting.
They've got to go into actual ground, and it has to be in the zone. We are in agricultural zone 5, and in zone 5, so you really, it's almost too early to plant in September because it's still too warm. You know, October generally. But November is, you know, again, you get the deals, and if it's still warm, you can take advantage of all that. So that's what I'm going to be doing for the next couple of days.
Good for you.
100 bulbs to get in.
I was just off at my leaf farm.
Okay.
That has become your lake house?
Is
it my lake house has become my leaf farm. And it was so funny, because we were driving home, and the guy who does my lawn, Antonio, who's a wonderful young man, he called and said, okay, I'm sending you my final cleanup bill, so final fossil, we're done. I said, Antonio, I was just there.
Yes.
There were so many leaves. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so he shared with me that I'm going to have to go and he's even going to go and speak to my neighbor.
Oh, that's
because our neighbor's landscaper blows the leaves in our yard.
Yeah. Does he really?
Yes.
Oh, no, that's
so
awful.
In fact, we were laughing because we were, you know, blowing off the balcony, and we were, you know, cleaning up and putting the statuary, you know, in the house. And we were laughing. Oh, my gosh, I'm so glad we got up here before Antonio did the final cleanup. And oh, my gosh.
And he had to, oh, Lord.
He had not. But anyway.
Oh, my gosh. We went up to, we were up way past your neck in the woods. We went up to Interlaken in Michigan on Sunday, because my daughter has a friend who is a student at the Interlaken Fine Arts Academy, Interlaken Academy of the Fine Arts, which is a boarding high school in Interlaken. So if you're driving 65 miles an hour, it's about a 5.5-hour drive, I learned.
Oh, my God.
Ask me how I know. 6 hours if you stop. Among the numerous things I learned, Michigan has much nicer rest stops than Indiana does. Much nicer. I mean, they're really nice. There's flowers on the countertop. There's, you know, all those kind of things. Flowers in the restrooms. And boy, are there different kinds of trees up there. So, I mean, the farther north you get, the more, just more different, I guess, the foliage is. And so there's a lot of Christmas tree farms up that way. You know, but I'm not driving 6 hours one way to get a freaking Christmas tree. Forget it. I'll let them bring the tree to me because I'm
very good.
But just really different type. I mean, it was really interesting, really different types of trees. And it's just a very different, like you're almost in Canada at that point, you know. So, but it's, they have, my daughter's friend is learning visual arts and graphic arts.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a high school where half your day is a traditional high school curriculum. And then your entire afternoon is dedicated to whatever your fine art expertise is. And so they have a classical music program. Which is my daughter's area. And so we went up there. But within about 2 hours, she was able to very easily discern that she does not want to go to boarding school 6 hours away. And I'm glad. You know, it was kind of, it was really nice. She said, you know, I think I would miss being at home, Mom. And I said, well, we would miss you. It was very sweet. It was very nice. And also, it's $76,000 a year. So we're...
thank you.
Yeah, we're glad they came to that conclusion. Yes. And so at any rate, we had dinner in a charming little pub or something like that up there.
Okay.
I mean, there's like nothing. There's a grocery store.
Tell me about it.
A pizza place where there's nowhere to sit. And then this little pub, you know, which appears to be the only place. But I had one of the best old fashions I have had, I think. And Notre Dame's Morrison makes a good old fashioned, but this one was just spectacular. It was really good.
I'm thrilled for you, Barry.
I think I can make it on my own.
Worth
the 6 hour drive, but but that was my weekend. But anyway, I was up in that. But the again, just because it's been such a mild November, mm-hmm. we had such a different experience with the drive up there, which normally in November would be very bleak and desolate.
Sure.
And you know, it was just the anniversary of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, for those of you who remember that song. And so, you know, that was up with Lake Superior, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Which is, I think, the deepest body of water in the United States outside of the ocean. It's the deepest.
Wow.
It's the deepest of all, which is why they could never find the boat.
Wow.
Yes. So a variety of fun facts for here, friends, for you to start our weekend.
We just watched movies. We huddled in the cold.
Good. What did you watch?
Well, I have to recommend.
Was it cold up at the lake? Because it was nice here.
You know, it was cold. Well, we've got the
lake effect, right on the lake. Yeah,
right. And we watched the Ron Clark story.
Okay.
Which the only reason is it's a Matthew Perry. I hadn't.
Oh.
You know, so I wanted.
We did not even touch on that last week.
Kind of, sort of, we did.
Did we?
Not last week, but the week before. I read your incredible post about his experience with praying.
And he really had a very personal experience with God when he really hit rock bottom with his addiction.
But the movie, The Ron Clark Story.
Okay, I don't know this one.
Oh, it's incredible. It's a story of a very good inspirational teacher who moves from North Carolina to the inner city in New York City and Harlem and takes a bunch of miscreants and turns them into the highest producing test scorers.
Oh, wow.
In the New York City.
Wait, did you say it's based on a true story?
Yeah.
No
kidding.
And
Ron Clark, apparently, the character of Ron Clark introduces these rules, starting with "We are a family," to get these kids to start respecting one another.
Right.
And what was so great was at the end of the movie, I don't want to spoil it for anybody that's going to watch it, but
like me.
Yes.
But yes, this was. Is this like family friendly? Like anybody?
Oh my gosh, anybody could watch
it. Okay. All right.
I wouldn't have watched it with my kids if it had.
How did you access? Did you get a DVD or did you get it on one of the streaming services?
I got it on one of the streaming services.
Okay.
I can find out for you.
All right.
Prime.
Oh,
I got it on Prime.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
I have to think. There's with, you know, two kids. I got not my children themselves, but my niece and my nephew.
Right. Right.
And my two kids. I got so much streaming devices. I just tell them this is what I want.
Well, I have been a guest in your home, as you know, when I was attempting to you know, watch the Ron Clark story or what? No, sorry. Something. Watch something. Watch one of your streaming services.
Yes.
And was trying to navigate the myriad with help of multiple teenagers.
Yes, I know.
And we did not have much success. But anyway.
Well, my kids think I used to work for the CIA.
So
they have buttoned me down. Trust me.
Oh, that's so funny. Anyway, okay, well, this is good to know. It's
good
on Amazon Prime.
Great
and,
movie.
Okay.
And I'm really even going to be, I'm going to be looking for his 55 rules. He's got these 55 rules. He took this one class all over the world. He started his own school in, Georgia. And so he truly is somebody that, I just want to look more into him because I am intrigued. Thanks to Matthew Perry,
okay,
who did a great job in the movie. He really is talented. So I would recommend the Ron Clark story. In the coming weeks, we're all going to be huddled at home having a really good time, and we are going to want to be with our family and turn this movie on. I can also share that we also watched 80 for Brady.
Oh. Oh, was that fun?
It was cute.
Yes, I saw the, the trailers or whatever they call them nowadays for that. And it looked fun. Yeah.
It looked fun. And there's a little, I'm just going to, spoiler alert, just for moms and dads that want to watch it with their kids. There's some gummy consumption.
Oh, good Lord.
So you can imagine. But it just makes them want to dance, you know.
Oh, that's very funny. You know, sometimes the cute old people movies are just what you need to kind of lift your spirits. So
yes, and Rita Moreno, she gave a stellar performance.
That was a cute cast. You know, that's, I think, a very, you can't go wrong with anybody. You'd have to just be an idiot as a director to go wrong with that cast. Before we get our guest online, we're going to take our break and have a guest. I want to read to you a very important editorial. It's short.
Okay.
That was in the Wall Street Journal.
Okay. And after you read that, can I just remind everybody whose saint it is today?
Why don't you do that first, and then I'll do my editorial.
It's Mother Cabrini.
It's Mother Frances X. Cabrini.
Yes.
Frances with an E.
Yes, Frances with an E. And she chose the name Xavier for the saint that went to the East.
Right.
And evangelized and converted many. But, you know, she died here in Chicago.
Yeah. Yes, I do know that.
I just was at her shrine,
mm-hmm.
and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. Yes. And did you know in the little museum that they have to her there, do you know what they have there? One of the coolest things? She had a ticket to be on the Titanic.
Oh, wow.
And she didn't go.
I did not know that.
And she didn't go. Yeah.
Well, there's relics there because there is the blanket.
The Titanic ticket is pretty cool. She was, God obviously had other plans for her. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, yes, the blanket, did you say?
Yes, the blanket where she died and the chair where she died. And the blanket has a stain of her blood, her relic.
Wow, so it's a first-class relic, yeah.
You know, and it really, what's so interesting is there's a movie coming out March 24th.
Oh.
March 2024.
Okay.
About Mother Cabrini. And I really have to laugh because, I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the trailer, so you can see it. But there is a man who I get the impression is some sort of benefactor of the archdiocese, and it may just be the New York archdiocese. I don't know if it continues till her death in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But this man looks at Mother Cabrini and says to her, "You would have made a great man."
Yeah. I know, and she was tough. I mean, there are plenty of people who grew up on Taylor Street in the old Little Italy whose grandparents knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And she went door to door asking for money.
Yes.
And Mother apparently didn't take no lightly or easily.
Yes.
And so, but you know, she was a very strong woman.
Yes.
And
so many are blessed
because of her faithfulness. Yep. Yeah.
And not just her faithfulness to God, but her obedience to the Pope.
Yeah.
When she went asking to take her group of nuns east to Japan, he said, "No, why don't you go to Italy?" Why don't you go to Little Italy in America, in New York?
Because the Italian immigrants needed her.
Yes.
They needed somebody with her strength and her advocacy skills for them. Because the Italian immigrants here, They were treated terribly. I mean, every immigrant group has faced challenges coming here, but, you know, Italians in a particular way during that time were very, very much discriminated against. So I am getting the signal from our beloved executive producer that we need to go to our first break. So we are going to do that. And then when we come back, we'll have, I'll end the show with the editorial from the Tribune. From the Wall Street Journal, rather, about Governor Pritzker essentially killing the school choice program, because it's going to not only affect thousands of kids in the state of Illinois, but also a number of kids who go to St. Stanislaus Academy. So it's just heartbreaking that the funding that they've had to go to school here has been taken away from them now. So I am Mary Fiorito, along with Loretta Frelick, my co-host, on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes. You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Frelick
on Winds of Change. St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststandschurch.org.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Frelick. We are sitting in today for Father Anthony, as we do every Monday, on Winds of Change on AM 750. Now, today marks a very special day in that it is the beginning of a novena to mark the 100-year anniversary of the death of Brother Columba O'Neill, CSC, who was a brother of the Congregation of the Holy Cross, which is most, I think, widely associated with the University of Notre Dame, at least in the United States. He was in the world known as John O'Neill, and he was a humble lay brother. And over the years, I mean, even during his lifetime, Brother Columba had a reputation for sanctity, as we used to say in the church, and that has only grown since his death. And many who have gone to pray at his grave in South Bend, he's buried on the campus at the University of Notre Dame, very humble grave next to his other brothers, and have reported many things, some just nothing short of miraculous, to have occurred at his gravesite. So the DeNicholas Center for Ethics and Culture and the McGrath Center at Notre Dame are going to be hosting this campus-wide novena that's going to obviously spread beyond the campus to anyone who wants to participate nationwide. And here to discuss it with us is Ken Hellenius, who is the communications specialist for the DeNicholas Center for Ethics and Culture. Ken, are you there?
I am indeed. Hi, Mary.
Hi. And this is Loretta is with me, my friend Loretta, who you may or may not have met over the years. But I know any friend of mine is a friend of yours, Kim, or hers.
Well,
or whatever that
phrase goes.
Pleasure
to meet you, Loretta.
And mine. I'm dying to hear what you have to tell us about Brother Columba O'Neill. I honestly, this is right up my alley. I love the power of God activated through humble, obedient servants. And, you know, where can we find more from you today?
Yeah. So, by the way, I am excited to be speaking to you on the Feast of Mother Cabrini. I heard you guys talking just before the break. Mother Cabrini is my own personal patron. I'm from Seattle, Washington, where she became an American citizen in 1909. And so this is a joyful occasion for me to be talking to people in the town where she died.
Amen.
So I'm really excited.
Yeah, amen. I just was at the shrine to Mother, and I would encourage everybody to get over to her shrine and see, you know, they built, there was a hospital that was there,
And then they sold the property, and the sisters required that the shrine and the church that's there be allowed to stay despite condominiums being built over it.
Wow, wonderful.
Yes.
Well, this is, so today, November 13th, is 1 week before the anniversary, as Mary was saying, the 100th anniversary of the death of Brother Columba O'Neill. Brother Columba was born John O'Neill in 1848 in a coal mining town in Pennsylvania, but he himself had a foot deformity, and he walked with a very dramatic limp. And that prevented him from becoming a coal miner like everyone else in his town. Hmm. So he apprenticed with the local town cobbler and became a shoemaker. And I think that's one of these wonderful things that the Lord does, right? He has this deformity of the foot. And what does he do? But he spends his entire life in service to helping people walk, you know, and repairing their shoes and really doing that which he couldn't do very well himself.
Ken, where did he come to meet the Holy Cross community? Were they present in the area where he grew up?
No. So he became an itinerant shoemaker and kind of began to move west. And he learned about the Brothers of Holy Cross being members of religious life that worked in the trades and that often supported the religious life of the community. And so he heard about the Brothers and their trade training program, and he began a correspondence with the novice master for the Congregation of Holy Cross, who happened to be Father Edward Sorin, who was, of course, very famous as the founder of Notre Dame and the superior of the Holy Cross in the United States. So he started writing to Father Sorin, and in 1874, he entered the community, entered the Brothers of Holy Cross, and he took the name Columba. So it was really through correspondence and that he found out about the work of the congregation. He himself was not a very educated man, but he was a man of deep, deep prayer, and he always had this, he was always known as one who had a childlike trust that his prayers were not only heard, but that God would actually act upon them.
And that is true humility, Ken.
Yeah.
True humility. That if you know it's not you, you know it is the power of God moving through you, and it is awesome. You know, I haven't read much, and I'm surprised I graduated from St. Mary's in Notre Dame. And so I'm really surprised I haven't heard about this, because this is right up my alley, as I said earlier.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what he used to do for the people whose shoes he would repair?
Yeah, so he was shoemaker not just to the Holy Cross community, but also to the community of Notre Dame, the students, the faculty, and people in the area. And he did this basically as his humble job from the time he moved back to campus in 1885 until basically just before he died in 1923. He had this profound devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Mm-hmm. And he would regularly tell everybody that came to drop off shoes or pick up shoes, he would tell them, you know, when they would talk to him about their prayer needs, he would encourage them to make a novena to the Sacred Heart. And the text he always told people, he said, he would tell people, pray to the Sacred Heart, the litany, and then pray five times a day, Sacred Heart of Jesus, cure me. Mm-hmm. And this spoken, you know, kind of guide to the people he interacted with, he began to make little medallions of the Immaculate Heart and the Sacred Heart. And he would then give the little medallion, you know, like a little piece of cloth with an image of the Sacred Heart or the Immaculate Heart on it. He would give them to the people that were picking up their shoes. And he would mail them to people that would write to him. And he actually estimated that by the time he died, he had given away about 10,000 Immaculate Heart badges and 30,000 Sacred Heart of Jesus badges. So this was his profound, you know, connection to the Sacred Heart, was always encouraging people to go back to Christ, to the mercy of Christ.
Praise God. Now, is there any plan in this canonization process that, and this prayer for canonization, that your organization is planning on
making these badges available to the public?
You know, you've caught me. You caught me out. That is a fantastic idea, obviously.
It's yours, Ken. It's yours.
I'm going to use that royalty free, and we're going to thank Servant of God Columba for this. But there is a wonderful display on campus in the library right now of some artifacts from the life of Brother Columba, including a number of his badges.
Are there shoes? Are there shoes that he made?
Well,
no, seriously.
Yeah, we do have the tools that he used.
Okay, but no, sadly, no shoes. I wonder, I would like to know what that looked like. I mean, seriously, I mean, I just think that's an interesting thing. I suppose there are still cobblers. I know in Italy, getting custom-made shoes is still a thing. So, okay, anyway, but it's in the library. How long is it going to be present in the library, Ken?
So that display is on through the 30th of November, so you still have the rest of this month, a few more weeks. If you happen to be coming to campus for the Wake Forest game, for example, come and check it out. It's available in the Hesburgh Library in the in their display room on the first floor of the library, just beneath the great image of the Word of Life mural, also known as Touchdown Jesus.
Well, that's awesome. Now, tell us, can we can just the public come too? Do you have to be an alumni with access to the library, or?
No, not at all. This is a public room, so you can come directly into the library. It's open. I think it's open during the business day, so 8:30 to 4:30 each day. And you can see these are really second class relics.
Yes,
these are things he touched and made, and give us a physical connection to him. You can also, as Mary mentioned before. At the beginning, you can also visit his grave, which is on campus too.
Now that's kind of hard to find.
Of the congregation.
It's because it's unless you know where it is, it's a little difficult to locate because there's again just reflective of Brother Columba's humility. He's buried alongside all the other brothers in if I recall correctly, they're buried in the order of their death, and so he's between the two people who died in front of him and after him, and. Which is still that's the tradition in most men's religious orders. Can you kind of give a description? I've already had a couple of people. I posted this on Facebook this morning. Ask me exactly where the grave was, I know it faces east because the brothers face east, correct? And then the priests face north. I think. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the community cemetery is located very near what is now Columba Hall. So the very hall that he actually died in, which at his time was known as Community Hall for the brothers, it's next to St. Mary's Lake, between St. Mary and St. Joseph's Lake, right near the grotto on campus. And it's actually towards on the little road that goes towards St. Mary's College. So it's on the north west side of campus. And the cemetery is located basically halfway between the grotto and St. Mary's College along the little side road there. So if you go to the grotto and turn right, you will walk about maybe a quarter mile and you will come to the cemetery of the Congregation of Holy Cross.
So it's right near the grotto there. Yeah. So and there's a little bit of public parking in that area too. So if you're visiting the campus and any student can tell you where the grotto is, and then there's a public parking lot next to that where you can park your car, and then it's a very short walk. If it's a nice day like today, you can just go and just read each of the graves. But I want to say that, there's a little road that runs in front of where the brothers are. So that's not hard to locate. And I want to say he's, three or four rows up. And then you just kind of, walk back and forth through the graves.
I would need a guide, but let me ask you this.
Are there going to be Brother Columba guides or any processions to the grave during any of this? Or are we giving you yet another idea?
So I know that on Monday in a week here, we will have a special mass in the Basilica that will be celebrated by the provincial of the congregation in the United States, Father Bill Leese, CSC. So that will take place in the Basilica at the conclusion of the novena. And I have yet to see an announcement about whether or not there will be a procession to his grave afterward, but I'm certain that certainly you know, we are very conscious of his time. Again, the novena kicks off tonight, and the novena consists primarily of praying as Brother Colombo would have wanted, praying the Litany of the Sacred Heart, because that is to whom his devotion was. His devotion was indeed to share and promote the Sacred Heart of Jesus and devotion through the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And so that's what the students and faculty and staff and folks that are on campus tonight will be praying, and every day for the next 9 days as we lead up to his 100th anniversary here on Monday the 20th.
I think you've got two more prayers. I think Mary and I will be hitting it.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. During his lifetime, the articles that I've read, he was known as the Divine Healer and the Miracle Man of Notre Dame. And he even traveled around the country visiting and praying for the sick. Can you tell us more about that, Ken?
Yeah, so, you know, as I mentioned, he was not himself a well-educated man. And so to read his letters, you know, he received thousands upon thousands of letters from people in asking for his prayer. And he tried to respond to everyone. He tried to at least send a little note, of thanks and a promise of prayers. And again, his prayer was entirely, one might describe it as childlike faith. And he trusted that Christ hears his prayers and that Christ would act on his prayers. And so he had this opportunity to be a spokesperson for the Sacred Heart, really, in a way.
Mm.
And and as I mentioned, so we preserved in the archives of the brothers, they have about 10,000 letters that were written to Brother Colombo. Now, he died in November 1923, following having contracted the Spanish flu after World War II.
How old was he?
Let's see. Oh, man, I was not told that this would be a math problem.
I'm sorry.
So he was born in 1848. He dies in 1923. Math says that's about 85.
Okay.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah,
somewhere in there.
You passed, Ken. You passed.
Yeah.
I was raised by the Irish Christian Brothers, so you can tell Brother Martin that I passed.
You were able to do mental math. You were able
to call him right after the show.
Okay.
So he dies at age 84, 85. And a number of letters were received after he had died from people, you know, who had not heard. And so some letters that were mailed to him asking for his prayers arrived here on campus, you know, in the months following. And again, his fame was so amazing for somebody who worked as a cobbler, you know,
right,
here on campus.
Right.
And it's just an incredible story. And again, much like, you know, Saint Andre Bessette.
I was just going to say that. Right.
Who is the you know, other kind of the one who has been raised fully to the altars. Of course, we have Blessed Basil Moreau, the founder of the congregation. Mm-hmm. But really, these two are these three, I should say, among others that are on the process among the congregation.
Right.
They're really examples of what simple people can do in their daily life just by guiding people to Christ, pointing back to the Divine Healer, pointing back to the mercy of God. Mm-hmm. And that's what really the legacy of Brother Colombo is, not about him. And he always pointed back to the Sacred Heart.
Right.
And that's, I think, the most important thing that we can take away from his story.
Yeah, like St. Andre did with, you know, St. Joseph, right?
And, exactly. Go to Joseph.
Yeah, right. It's and just that complete confidence and trust. But it's also, you know, very reminiscent of Brother, or now Blessed Solanus Casey, also different religious community, but also a doorman, a humble porter, and also struggled in school and wasn't very gifted academically, and would, you know, people would come, and one wonders, like I know for Andre Bessette's funeral, a million people came to his funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, there's video of it. And you think, you know, before the internet, before a lot of people even had telephones, word had spread of his death. And, you know, the Miracle Man of Montreal, right, that they called him. And so I just think it's such a beautiful thing about the Congregation of the Holy Cross that the two, and this is not to take anything away from any of the founders or Basil Moreau or anybody else, but like the two best known by the people were, you know, not the great academics, not the great scholars, not the priests, but the two humble brothers who did work that probably, you know, a lot of people didn't consider very important. But it's like, the average person, you know, isn't it funny how just the average person can detect the sanctity of another person who is really holy? You just feel it when you're around them.
Yes. And two, Ken, I think it's also important. We all want a touch of God. We want a touch from God. And so this simple man is giving people these little holy, you know, I don't even know if they're holy patches. I don't even know that they're cards.
Yeah, exactly
that he
right.
makes himself. And in our mass production world, these are going to families that have a prayer need. He's telling them to trust Jesus and pray this prayer. And oh my gosh, isn't the Lord healing them? Isn't the Lord answering their prayer? And, you know, I think he is such just a messenger for today. We need to trust Jesus. Jesus has it going on, and he's coming for us, and we need to trust him. And it's the simplicity in this beautiful man's life that tells us that. God cares about us. God cares about us.
God loves us and uses simple tools, you know.
Right.
I mean, this is quite literally in this case. And, and, you know, again, as I was mentioning, too, at the beginning, you know, also the sign value of this man who himself walked with a profound limp serves his life as a cobbler, you know, and that's one of those things that I think, again, God has this divine sense of humor, but when we can take ourselves, as Chesterton said, when we don't take ourselves too seriously, like the angels fly because they don't take themselves seriously, right?
Right.
And this man who walked with a profound limp had tremendous impact beyond the walls of campus, beyond the edges of campus, and is somebody that here, 100 years after he died, we are looking at him as a model of sanctity and a model of holiness. And that's just inspiring. And it makes me want to be better.
Right, right. And so tell me, is there, as far as you've noticed, is there like a devotion to him among the students? Do they go to his grave? Or is this event meant to also raise awareness among the student body, undergrad and graduate schools, of Brother Columba's, importance? And I mean, my goodness, I'm just thinking they have the opportunity now to literally just go up to his grave and be at his grave. And I imagine the remains are going to be removed at some point as the progression,
continues.
The cause progresses. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it very much this is an opportunity to raise awareness. Bishop Kevin Rhodes of the Diocese of Fort Wayne South Bend formally opened the cause for Brother Columba. So that means that now he is servant of God. That was it was in June of 2022. So that means, of course, the formal investigation, so collecting all of his writings, looking in, and making sure that there are no, you know, red flags of any sort.
Right.
All of that process is happening right now in the diocese. And once all of that is gathered, it will be sent to Rome. But a key portion of this is to show that there is active devotion to Brother Columba.
Right.
And so because of that, I think this opportunity, this anniversary, the novena, all of these are very much consciousness raising, as well as inviting students. And I know that this is something we've had a talk. We did a talk for our students that are affiliated with the DeNicola Center, our Soren Fellows. There's another reference to Father Soren, of course. The Soren Fellows, we had Brother Philip, who is a Holy Cross brother who's in charge of the cause of Brother Columba. Brother Philip came and talked about the life of Brother Columba for our students. So we've already begun kind of promoting and encouraging students, both graduate and undergraduate, to get to know the life of Brother Columba. And so this is really a chance to share the word, and especially here, even our brothers and sisters in the Chicagoland area, you guys are only 90 miles away. Come visit Brother Columba. Come and you know, be invited to a deeper relationship with the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the intercession of the servant of God, Brother Columba. That's really our goal.
Right. Well, that's an invitation I could not refuse, and I hope everyone listening today won't refuse it either. Ken, how can people find out or follow if they can't make the trip to South Bend? Is there a website or a way that they can follow along virtually with all of these wonderful things that are happening the next 9 days?
So right now, it's pretty much kind of limited to a couple news stories that have been written. So if you go to news.nd.edu, that's news.notredame.nd.edu, there's a story about the 100th anniversary and the novena that we're celebrating. I don't have a link to the actual prayers yet, but I'm going to get that, and I will send that to you, Mary, for inclusion in the show notes.
Yes,
and things
please.
Like that. Yeah.
And we'll make people know about it. And we'll be praying along with you. And thank you both to the McGrath. Is it the McGrath Institute or the McGrath Center?
Yeah, it's the McGrath Institute for Church Life and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture.
Wonderful. Well, thanks to both of your entities, I guess, at Notre Dame for all you're doing. And I just think it's a wonderful thing that you're working together to promote Brother Columba's cause and to make people better aware of him because, of course, you know, he will always point us back to Jesus and his Sacred Heart. And great graces, I know, are going to come from this novena. So thank you so much for giving us your time today, Ken. It was wonderful to talk to you. And I am hoping maybe in a couple of weeks or months we can have you back on and we can hear about prayers answered. I'd love to know about prayers that were answered through this particular novena. As you know, Scripture tells us when we pray in unison for something, we are always heard. And so we're going to be praying in unison for all the intentions of people who are going to Brother Columba with the same trust and faith that he had in the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So can you have a wonderful week? And listeners, don't go away. We are going to be back after this next break. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick on Winds of Change on AM 750.
Thanks so much.
St. Stanislaus Kostka. The Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststandschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststandschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750. And that was just a delightful conversation with Ken Hellenius, and we will have some additional information in the show notes for anyone who would like to follow along with the novena to Brother Columba O'Neill, CSC, which is short for the Congregation of the Holy Cross. So
you can learn more about him, too, Mary, by just going online and looking up Brother Columba O'Neill. And there's just tons of information provided by the university.
Wonderful.
That would let people read about his life.
Yeah, I've been praying to him for the last couple of years for things, and I always try to stop by the grave when I'm there. And because I had a friend who several years ago had a son who had something similar to like chronic fatigue syndrome, mm-hmm. and he was unable to get out of bed and take care of himself. It was just incredibly draining. So she got a Sacred Heart badge, went to his grave, you know, prayed the prayer that he always recommended, which was Sacred Heart of Jesus, heal me.
Yes.
Touched it to his grave, put it under her son's pillow. And the next day, he was able to get out of bed by like 9 a.m, which was very unusual. The next day, he was able to get up and take a shower.
Glory
and
to God.
Just had a gradual improvement and improvement, improvement. It wasn't instantaneous. It was improvement day to day.
Sure.
But now he's, you know, really almost completely back to normal. So she attributes that 100% to the intercession of Brother Columba.
And
in fact, the night that the boys from the St. Ignatius Junior Varsity hockey team were on their way back from a tournament in Indiana and were broadsided by a drunk semi-truck driver. And the boys had been, they were airlifting them to different hospitals. Two of them were very critically injured. I remember I went to his grave. It was snow. I couldn't even find it. There was so much snow. There's probably 2 or 3 feet of snow. But I just stood there, and there was one boy who was very, I had heard through friends, was very, very seriously hurt. And I just said, Brother Columba, please do not let any of those boys die. This happened right near here. Don't let those boys die. And, you know, none of them did. And I'm not,
praise God.
You know, I can't, there were many, many people praying, of course, for those boys that night. But I just felt a special something from Brother Columba that he was going to take care of them. So
glory
I just, yeah, I just, and you know, I like to get in with saints on the ground level, you know, before they get too busy. Like, you know, poor St. Anthony, everyone's yes. always asking him for everything. So this is an opportunity. This is like an early investment. This is like buying Apple stock, my friends, at the going early rate. And but I love to let people know, especially about humble, beautiful saints that
yes.
everybody can relate to, right?
Right. You know? And that's why I am really hoping Ken takes us up on his new idea.
Yes.
To make
Ken's
the
idea.
Sacred Heart and the Blessed
the
Mother.
Yeah.
Because there's the beautiful Blessed Mother
yes.
That's included in the examples
right.
that they're showing. And it's really, it's not, and it shows her heart. And, you know, Mary always points to Jesus.
Oh, of course.
Always
do whatever he tells you. Her last
yes.
words in Scripture,
do whatever
he tells you.
And what's so important, though, is that we're not worshiping Mary, and people need to understand that.
Yeah, I know. It just, I don't know. I don't understand sometimes our Protestant brothers and sisters and their animosity towards Mary. I can get that, you know, they don't have a particular devotion to her, and they mm-hmm. would rather pray directly to God the Father or, you know.
Right.
That's fine. But what I don't understand is the animosity towards
yes.
Mary.
Because they don't understand Mary.
And
they don't understand
because
that she is a way to Jesus.
Yes. And that she never takes away from Jesus.
No. Nope.
She only adds to our love for him. So,
amen.
So at the beginning of the show, I had mentioned that the Wall Street Journal had done an editorial, which went online last night live, but was in the print edition this morning. And it involves mostly Catholic, but also other private schools in Illinois. And so it's distressing news. And I wanted to share it with our listeners, because unless we start, you know, making politicians pay the price for voting against the best interests of their constituents, things will never change in the state of Illinois. And I don't know what more I can say, but I do want to read this editorial because I'm not sure that people in general understand, or unless you were following this issue pretty closely, you might not understand some of the nuances. So I'm just going to read it. So again, this is from the Wall Street Journal. I'm reading it because the Wall Street Journal has a notoriously high paywall, and that you don't get any free articles a month, nothing. You can't go online and read things. So I have cut and pasted it, and I'm going to read it to you now. So it is called School Choice Dies in Illinois. The Union Democratic Machine kills scholarships for 9,600 poor children. Governor Pritzker let it happen. All right. Sometimes the worst political scandals occur in plain sight, even if most of the press corps chooses not to notice. That's what happened last week in Illinois, where the Democratic Union machine killed scholarships for 9,600 low-income children, most of whom were minorities. The State and National Teachers Union made a priority of blocking an extension of the Invest in Kids program that provided a 75% tax credit for donations to help families afford private schools. The unions claim the credit drained money from public schools. But public funding has increased nearly $2 billion since Investing Kids began under former Governor Bruce Rauner. Only 35% of Illinois children can read at grade level, according to WirePoints. So no wonder there are more than 20,000 children on the Investing Kids waiting list. Currently, Governor J.B. Pritzker refused to help save, current Governor J.B. Pritzker refused to help save the program. Even for children currently benefiting from it, those families will now have to find some other way to pay tuition. Empower Illinois, the state's largest scholarship-granting organization, said it will seek private donors to cover the tuition. But the most common donation was $1,000, and many of those smaller donors may disappear without the tax credit. Governor Pritzker is a billionaire, and his Pritzker Family Foundation could help. According to Crane Chicago Business, the foundation has donated $8.3 million to Milton Academy, the Massachusetts boarding school that Mr. Pritzker attended. It has donated $2.5 million to Duke University, according to the Carolina Journal, and $100 million to Northwestern's Law School, which has renamed itself in Pritzker's honor. Invest in Kids is a bargain by comparison, requiring about $71 million for the coming year. Illinois is now the first state in the nation to kill a major school choice program. The scandal reflects the bloody-mindedness of the unions that want to snuff out even minor competition to retain their monopoly. And it reveals how little most Democrats care about the children they imprison in these failure factories. Isn't that powerful? And that's exactly what a lot of the public schools have become. They are failure factories. And it is just disgraceful that the teachers' union, and when you think of the money, especially that the Chicago Teachers Union, members make, and then there are seven figure pensions on top of it. And yet year after year, they crank out kids. 35% cannot read at grade level. And that's just not in the city of Chicago in poor neighborhoods. That is statewide. 25%, I think, can do math at grade level.
Wow.
That's extraordinary. I mean, that is a failing system no matter. No, I mean, in business, they'd all be fired and the whole thing shut down and they'd say start over again.
That's right. And what I find so interesting, I sit on a school board for a Catholic school.
Okay.
And what I find so interesting is how important this program was. Students would wait and wait and wait until the tuition assistance bill hit to give them the opportunity to come to a Catholic school. So it is not just a plan to stop kids from learning.
Okay.
Because we live in a very affluent community, but maybe some students can't. And so the schools are excellent.
Yes.
I don't take any of that away from them.
Right.
But you also learn more in, I think, in Catholic schools.
No, of course you do. Because no questions are off limits,
no.
Right?
But so. You also learn character. You learn how to get along with people. You learn your importance, to the world in your Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about saints like
Saint Mother Cabrini.
Yeah.
You learn about service to
yes.
other people and service
yes.
to your community. You
yes.
learn about, and I'm not saying that public schools can't impart some of these things.
But not at the same
no,
level.
No, but Catholic schools begin with the premise that our rights don't come from the government.
Right.
Our rights come from a creator God who is good and created each of us to know him and love him and serve him in this life and be together with him forever in
yes.
the next. And that undergirds everything we do. And it's not just like, hey, our kids go and fill, Thanksgiving baskets for the poor the day before Thanksgiving. It's not just things like that. And in every day, kids can pray for their prayer intentions
yes.
in our classrooms.
Yes.
They can ask questions like, why did God let this happen to my grandma? Why did
yes.
my dad die? We can grapple with those kind of things that, frankly, those are the big questions in life that people face.
And absolutely.
All of that, the dignity of the human being, the way in which we approach any of the, today's moral issues or societal issues is seen through this lens of the dignity of the human person. And to take that away from, and again, this is the choice of the parents.
Yes.
Parents are the primary educator of the child. And I just look, you know, just a few feet from us is the wonderful St. Stanislaus Academy, where, you know, kids who are largely children of color, whose parents are working so hard and who many have benefited from this scholarship. Now Governor Pritzker allowed this to be taken away,
yes.
yet gave $8 million to an elite boarding school in Massachusetts, where the tuition is $75,000 a year.
Oh,
I know that because I have a friend who sends her child there. And they're a well-to-do family. And again, that was the best choice for their child. Their child is a very advanced learner. She was not being challenged even at one of the best Catholic high schools in the area. So they really had to move her in order for her to realize her potential. And they had the means to do it. So God bless them. But when you see other parents who want to meet the special needs their children have, you know, they have no resources.
And two, Mary, it's not just what you're talking about academically. It's also in the leadership skills that I know at our parish, at St. Luke, in the leadership skills, do you know that the younger students have a prayer partner in an older student?
Right, yes.
And that increases the leadership ability of the older student.
Yes.
You have a responsibility that you must care for.
Yes.
And you must care for the younger students. And you must become that example.
Right.
And that is so important to develop a leader.
Right. Yes. Not everything is about you. And
right.
we do this at my daughter's Catholic high school. She is a peer tutor for some of her school is 6th grade through 12th grade. So she is a peer tutor for some of the girls in the middle school, and she is very gifted in a couple of areas in particular academically, and she is being asked to use some of those gifts to help other kids who are struggling, which
yes.
she is doing because she knows the whole world is not about her and does not revolve around her most of the time. So at any rate, you know, listeners, find out if your state representative did not support the Invest in Kids program. And if they're a Democrat, it's 99.9% certain that they did not. And then remember that when you go to the polls. If we keep sending these people back to Springfield, we're going to get more of the same. And Governor Pritzker is, it's astounding to me he will allow this to be taken away from the poor while he is spending millions on migrants, who God bless them. I know many of them came here under false pretenses or were sent here under false pretenses. And we're invited here by the Biden administration for all intents and purposes. But, you know, millions and $300 million already.
But did you see the headline in the Trip today?
They're leaving.
The American dream is over and they're going back to Venezuela
yeah.
because there's
to live
nothing
under a dictator.
Here for us.
Yeah.
There's nothing here for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, reading, that's an article that was in the Chicago Tribune yesterday, Sunday, listeners, and some of them, and I had heard this from others who are doing some work with the migrant community here, they came here under the impression, and I don't know who gave it to them, they were going to have apartments and hot
Joe
meals.
Biden.
Hot meals every day and a stipend.
Joe Biden.
Monthly stipend to live on and jobs that their asylum claims would be processed quickly. And again, they're in a very Venezuela is a nightmare because of the dictator who runs it. But they are they're suffering, but they're economic migrants.
Right.
They're not technically asylum seekers.
Right.
And
so write your state rep. Ask them why they voted against
yeah.
something that was helping its people.
Yes.
Remember, Pritzker's family lived in Florida in freedom.
During the pandemic.
During the pandemic,
yep,
while we were all on lockdown.
Yep. Well, listeners, that is enough for our rant, our closing rant. Beautiful to be with you today. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
God bless you.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. to say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that.